are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. I'm your host, Tyus France. Sitting somewhere across Las Vegas is Alex. Thanks for co-hosting.
Thanks for having me, Tyus.
So today, as promised from last episode, we're going to talk specifically about universities. And I gave a little hint that we might go that direction, and then I got really caught up in the idea. And there's a lot to spew from me about universities. But before we do, we talked a little bit about the Florida shooting last week, which got us into gun control, and there was a little bit of breaking news that happened right after we recorded the episode, and I wanted to mention that, and that's specifically that. Right after we recorded it, they announced that there was not only a police officer sitting outside that school where there was an active shooter, there was four armed police officers sitting outside that school. And this has been weighing on me heavily this week, and that's why I'm bringing it up, because I'm really pissed off about the idea that the FBI was informed with two phone calls, the local police had gotten something like 30 phone calls. There was four police officers that were armed sitting outside the school, and the government failed us really on every level, and it really, really upset me. So I wanted to report on that little piece of news because, as the debate on guns continues forward, the idea of saying, hey, let's only have the government with these guns. The government fails us when they're the only ones with those guns, and we have nothing but incredible proof to show that, including the Florida shooting. So, sorry for beating a dead horse with this, but it was on my mind, and it was weighing heavily on me. If you want to comment on any of that, feel free to jump in, or we can just move right into the university stuff. What's your thoughts?
I think that you nailed it. I mean, the government failed us, and the idea that we're supposed to give them more power and control after they just failed us and failed these kids and failed these families, that's disturbing, right? At every level, municipal and at federal levels, this guy was talked about, warned well in advance. And it wasn't like they were told the day before. We're talking about, you know, several, a month in advance to 6 months in advance. There were already warning signs there. And again, I'm not saying, you know, go in and take away this guy's rights before he's done something, right? But interview him, find out, you know, what sorts of things that we can do to intercede. Who knows what might have stopped him from making that decision? You know, there's always those short-term fuses they talk about in these sort of mass shooter scenarios. There's always the long-term fuse, usually bullying and this sort of thing. And you have a short-term fuse like the mother's death. You know, to trained FBI profilers, this was everything that they needed to say, hey, we got to watch this guy. He's actively made threats against schools. That's already enough to go to a judge with and get a warrant to see if he's making any kind of plans. And that's the process to follow. And they had the time to do it. So the idea that they needed to anything else to solve this problem is immaterial. Not to mention the fact, I keep hearing things, I don't know if you've heard about this, Tyus, but this guy was not under 21, and yet people are deciding that now 18 to 21-year-olds, and ironically enough, spearheaded by children, want to take away the rights of 18 to 21-year-olds from owning firearms. So if you're 18, 19, or 20, and you're listening to this podcast, basically what they're saying is, well, we don't think that you're responsible enough. You're responsible enough to die for your country. You're responsible enough to vote, but I just don't trust you owning a rifle.
Do you think they'll take the rights away from soldiers? So do you think they'll say, you know what, now you can't enlist until you're 21, because part of that enlistment means we're going to hand you a gun? Something tells me that they'll still take those people. I think they'll only discriminate against public sector.
I agree with you, and I honestly think that, you know, either you're an adult at 18 or you're an adult at 21, but this sort of both ages, I think, is very misguided. I think that at 18, we've sort of agreed that humans have graduated with a certain level of education that's mandated by the government itself at 18. They've reached a certain level of sexual maturation and physical development and mental development that they can be trusted to vote and to be participative in the societal kind of framework that we've set up. Now, I'm not saying that they want to be involved, but, you know, and most 18 to 25-year-olds aren't involved, unfortunately. I wish they were. But the point is that either it's 18 or it's 21. And this sort of hat straddling the fence sort of a thing, it's very confusing and it's very frustrating to these 18-year-olds who can go to Canada, right, and the socialist Canada, and can get a beer. And then, yet when they come here, that's not a that's a no-fly. And so there's just a lot of issues here, but I think that as a society, we've pretty much said 18 is the new, that's the age of adulthood. And so at that point, you should be a full-fledged American citizen. There should be no curtailment of your rights, unless, of course, there is due process. And that brings me up to another point, I think, Tyus, that we should definitely take a moment to make is, what was the president thinking? Take the guns first, due process later. First of all, that doesn't even make sense because due process is the idea that you have to have evidence. You have to have that evidence go before a judge, and the judge decides if it's time to begin intruding upon their privacy to decide in the interest of the safety and security of other citizens. But that's not the call for the president to make, first off. And second, he's an idiot. He proved once again that we have an idiot for president. Because simply by saying the due process comes second, clearly he doesn't know what due process is. This guy has never had to fight his own legal battles. He has no idea about the long-term or even the short-term ramifications of the laws that he's proposing. What are your thoughts on this, Tyus?
Well, I think due process is one of the things that actually protects us as citizens. So anytime that's removed, it's ludicrous to do it. And this is not something that we can look at our current president, who it's very, very easy to vilify him because he is an idiot. However, this is something that Obama did too. Obama removed due process while he was in office and basically said, you know what, we can do certain things without running through due process, which means we're seeing these trends on both sides of the political spectrum. And maybe it's time for people to jump on a third option. And for those people, we're here for you. We might be the only one. It's strange that the left and the right seem to both actually be advocating for the same things nowadays. And it's very weird that this third party has to jump in and say, you know what, there needs to be something that's reasonable. And picking small issues to say, hey, we're divided on these small issues, when the big issues, they continue to move forward. National debt, war, removing our own civil rights, like all of these massive, massive issues, both parties seem to be in agreement of, with the exception of the Libertarian Party, who says, you know what, we need to defend those civil rights. We want to be anti-war, not pro-war. You know, we need to reduce the debt. These are the big, big issues that are being ignored. And those are the issues that I won't stand for, and that's why I'm involved, and I encourage others to get involved as well. Let's transition. Let's talk a little bit about what I promised on our last episode, which is we made a little promise about talking about universities. And universities have a special place in my heart. Are you a college graduate, Alex?
I am.
Cool. I'm a college dropout. So I'm glad we've got a spectrum to discuss. Yeah, I'm glad you're on one end of it, I'm on another end of it. For me, I always looked at universities and I've said, you know what, after high school, that's just the natural progression. That's the natural step. And I jumped into it and I went, you know what, this isn't for me. And I've done fairly well without a college diploma or a degree of any kind. And I know many people, like you, that have done really great going through the university system, and I figured we should talk a little bit about it and some of the issues that have really come up more lately than before. So a lot of the data that I've pulled for this episode goes all the way back to 2005. So even if I had gone to college or finished college, the data would have been older than when I had graduated. So anyways, there's a few areas that I'm going to talk about. One's going to be admissions, the cost of college and student debt, the facilities, free speech, and safety on campus. So I figured we should start at the beginning with admissions to universities. And so as many of you know, admissions rates are sometimes very, very difficult to get into. If you're looking at like Harvard or Stanford, we're talking about 5% acceptance rate, which is intense, especially when everybody wants to get into these colleges. Most are not going to make it. But probably the bigger issue with admissions when it comes to our party is that these admissions departments seem to freely discriminate against, different races. So there has been a Princeton University Press technically, did a big, big study, and they found that when it comes to SAT scores, there's a massive advantage given to certain races and massive disadvantages given to other races. So if we're going to say white, a white person is the baseline, if we're going to say that's zero, if somebody got a 1600 on a SAT scale of 1600, if an Asian gets that, they are instantly penalized about 140 points because they're Asian. On the other hand, if you're Hispanic, you're granted an additional 130 points, and if you're black, you're granted an additional 310 points on your admissions just based off of your skin color alone. Now, a lot of people look at this and they say, well, you know what? People of color, I guess, I mean, even though Asian is people of color, certain races come from harder times maybe and need a leg up. And I wonder, I really, really wonder if I'm a black American, African American, whatever we want to call it, and I get into that college, I wonder if people are going to look down on me if I worked just as hard as everybody else, if they're going to go, well, he got in because this college openly discriminates against our race and other races, and they give him a step up, a leg up. And I wonder what that does as far as people's perception of that. Ultimately, you're creating groups, you're creating collectivism, you're segregating people when you don't have to. You could treat everybody as equals, as individuals, which is such a fundamental principle of the Libertarian Party. So that's my little rant on admissions. Have you seen these stats, Alex, on the admission rates?
Yes, and because I went to college more recently, I definitely had personal experiences, tough experiences with this sort of thing. I can recall an instance in which my application was compared to someone of a different ethnicity or race or whatever you want to call it, and that was determined to be the reason why I was not admitted. I have some pretty hard evidence that that was why. And it's completely legal. It's a private university. It wasn't even a public one, which I think it's way worse when the public, you know, universities are allowed to do this, because they're supposed to be, you know, equal protection under the law. So if you're a public university and you discriminate based on any factor besides merit, technically you're violating our 14th and 15th Amendment rights. So I'm sorry, but maybe you don't want a 90% Asian school, then use different admission criteria. But you can't use ones that are that go against the due or the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment and the Due Process Clause of the 15th Amendment. Now, if you're a private organization, like, say, an MIT or a Harvard or something, you can use whatever criteria you want. You could have a foot race to decide who you admit, because you're free to discriminate. We've always said, and the Supreme Court recently upheld, you're free to discriminate as a business. And, you know, that's significant because I can tell you with certainty that because this school that I won't name has discriminated against me, I, you know, if I ever do make it, let's say, one of these days, they're going to miss my money and my endowment and my encouragement that people go there. But I honestly think that, you know, as much as this problem is, you know, it's very emotionally charged, especially for people who might be getting admissions decisions that they're disappointed. And the fact is that, you know, UNLV prides themselves on being the most diverse college in the country. I think that's not anything to celebrate. I think that what they're really saying is that we have the right numbers of people from each box. What they aren't saying is these people were belong here, right? What they're not saying is that they had to leave behind qualified students in order to admit less qualified students because of an arbitrary belief that diversity in and of itself is valuable. Now, diversity is valuable, but it's diversity that you achieve through natural means, right? And again, I'll give you an example. How horrible would it be if I were to go to, let's say, a number of Hispanic students and say, you know, you only got in because of your skin color? How do you think that would let them? How do you think that would affect their performance? I would be willing to put money down that it would severely hurt their performance. In fact, it would undermine their belief that they were good enough to get in. Because you know what? They may have been good enough to get in, but they're always going to wonder, did I get an advantage? And this is especially true of women in science. It's been true for decades that women do not go into science at the rate they should. Women have been involved and important in science since the beginning. They have invented stellar classifications for what types of suns you might have, this sort of thing. They were instrumental in helping us get to space. And in a number of important areas such as physics and chemistry, for example, Madame Curie, only person, woman or male, male, female, to receive two Nobel Prizes, one in chemistry, one in physics. That's an achievement, I mean, right? But she got there because she was the best. She was that much better. She was so good that she broke through all of the sexist barriers, and she still made it. That's how good she was. That's a testament to how brilliant of a woman this was. And there are a lot of brilliant women out there. And what we need to be doing is we need to be at the very earliest ages encouraging them to believe that they can become a scientist or they can become a lawyer or a doctor or whoever. And this goes for any ethnic group or any minority, right? We need to be saying you're not defined by your minority status, right? You're defined, and Dr. King very famously said, right, the content of your character. That's how we should judge others. I might extend that, if the Honorable Reverend Dr. King wouldn't mind too much, to say it's really about merit, right? It's about how good you are as a person and how good you are at a particular skill. We want the best people working on problems that are suited optimally for them. And what we don't want is we don't want to say, well, women's role is in the kitchen and they ought to not be. That's totally wrong, right? That's the sort of thing we have to be fighting. That's what we have to be diligent for, and we have to fight against those attitudes. But that doesn't mean that I should admit women who aren't as good simply because they're women. Because, again, every feminist I've ever talked to, I've said, which one would you rather have? Would you rather get in but know for certain that it was only because you were a woman or not get in? And every single one of them I've talked to has said, I would much rather not get in. And you know why? Because I want to be in for my skill, my worth as a physicist or as a chemist. I want to get there because I was the best. And that's exactly what everyone should do.
Oh, sorry about that. I didn't mean to interrupt. There's an interesting article in Ars Technica right now where they talk about women that go into science careers are more often coming from countries without gender equality, which is a very, very interesting read. So, and it's about this topic. You know, they're going into science specifically in countries where they're not fighting over and over again for equality. People just go after the interests that they're into. So if you want to read more up on that, check out this Ars Technica article. If you follow me on Facebook, I posted it up there a while ago. It's kind of cool. Let's transition into the cost of college, because it's outrageous. And this is definitely an area where the government actually has a hand in the reason it's so expensive. So to give you an idea of how expensive private college is, well, we're talking about $35,000 per year on average, right? What kind of damage that does to students? As of the average class of 2016, they graduated owing nearly $40,000 of debt, right? And basically, that boils down to $1.5 trillion, or twice the amount of credit card debt the U.S. has overall. And nearly all student loans are government-backed, which is wild. But let me explain why the government has a huge impact on this. Because the government is willing to give almost anybody a student loan if they're going to college, it changes the way the colleges need to handle supply and demand. So let's say I have a building that can hold 100 people, and suddenly the government says, hey, we're going to give everybody loans to go to your school if they want to go. Suddenly, I have to figure out a way of sorting out who I'm going to take in, because I don't have enough space for everybody. So the supply of people is massive now. Everybody can attend because everybody's got the money to attend. However, I don't have the supply to provide. So I can start building more classrooms as quickly as possible. But really the easier thing to do is for me to raise my prices. You know, if everybody was coming into a supermarket and they all suddenly had, I don't know, let's say 30 grand given to them by the government, I'm going to charge a lot more for my food because everybody has enough money to pay a lot more for that food. So the government, by giving out these loans to everybody, is essentially hiking up the price of college. And what's worse about this is these are loans that students really can't pay back, and they're non-forgivable. So they get out of college, they don't have a way of paying it back, especially if you're getting, like, I hate to say it, but like a degree in art or women's studies or something like that. Like, they're not really transferable degrees, at least that
outside of academia. Yeah,
outside of academia. What are you going to use these things for? If you were a private bank and somebody came to you and they said, hey, I want a loan because I'm going to go to class, I'm going to learn about pottery for 4 years, it's going to cost me $35,000 a year, you know, so could I get 140 grand from you? And yeah, I have no credit history, so I can't prove that I can pay you back. I've got no equity on anything. Would you give me that loan? The answer is going to be absolutely not. It's a terrible, terrible loan. Now, if any business gets these loans, it's because they can show previous history of credit. They can give out equity. They can say, hey, there's security behind this loan. These things are going out to people that really don't have evidence to show that they can repay it. And they're getting degrees in things that, well, unfortunately, are not skills that people need very much. Even my friend who's an attorneys get paid a lot of money. He says, you know, the first few years out of law school, it's a joke. Another friend of mine's a dentist, and he says, you know, your only options is either to work for a dentist or start your own practice. If you start your own practice, you've got to buy, you know, $2 million worth of stuff. So that's going to put you even farther behind. You spend the rest of your life paying back your loans from college and from opening your own practice. So anyways, this debt is a massive, massive problem, but it's really only created by the fact that the government wants everybody to go to college, whether they should or shouldn't. And there's been studies showing that people that do like white-collar jobs, or blue-collar jobs, white-collar, not, okay. Anyways, people that are out there welding and doing plumbing, they actually end up making more than doctors do. If they skip college and go right into work to the workforce, they can end up making a lot more money than professionals that have to take 4 to 8 years of college in order to have a skill set. Now, maybe that doctor comes out getting paid more, but by the time they've caught up to their student loans and everything, they're already way behind, and they can't retire early, and at least not as early as a welder who can get paid $100,000 a year right off the bat. So, yeah. Anyways, massive problem with student loans. You got thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, first off, let me just say that not everyone needs to go to college, and I think that the big lie in this country is that you need to go to college. You don't. Unless you're becoming, like, I'm an engineer. If you want to become an engineer, you're likely going to need college. You don't have to. Now, I do software engineering, so if I'm more of a programmer, right, you don't really need a college degree for that. But as a software engineer where you're doing design, there's certain things you do learn in college that are important. I wanted to go into academia originally, so I got a degree in physics, and so that's not something that you're going to be able to do outside of the college, you know, kind of research culture and this sort of thing. But if I was going to become any number of jobs that make way more money, you don't need a college degree to do that. And in fact, most of the open jobs in this country are in this area. That's why they're paid so well. Plumbers, electricians, I know we keep saying it, garbage men. Can you believe how much money people make for picking up the trash? It's not a job that people want to do. Here in Nevada, they make somewhere between $60,000 and $80,000 a year salary, 3 days or 4 days a week. Now they get up hella early, right? And they do drive a truck all day, but that's pretty good money for someone whose skill is picking up the trash. And so in my mind, and it's a job at home, right? It's not like long haul trucking where you're constantly away and inconvenienced. So there are so many jobs you can do that don't require a college degree. And when employers do require a college degree for them, that's kind of dumb. In fact, to become a truck driver, which is one of the most common jobs in the whole country, you often only need a CDL. And so skip the college, just go get your commercial driver's license, this sort of thing. If you want to become an EMT, you don't need college either. Go get your EMT certificate. Take your one semester of community college classes that get you the knowledge you need to pass, and you go on. And this is how it should work. But we're so locked into this, everyone goes to college, everybody has the college experience, but really it's slowly but surely becoming glorified public education for 18 to 22 year olds where you don't live at home. That's the only difference. Yep. That's the only difference that's become, I soon predict that this will be the only difference, is that it's going to be high school plus. So everything's going to be brought down to an even lower and dumber level. And I'm sorry, but I mean, the IQ of our country is slipping. So we're clearly not doing, and I'm not going to blame teachers either. I think that the problems are completely organizational. I mean, you can't jam 45 kids in a class and expect them to do as well as when there was only 20 kids in the class. And the fact is that it's inefficient to do brick and mortar schools at every level for all students. It's also inefficient to say that every student even needs a full high school degree. Once you've received basic English and basic mathematical capabilities, many students might be better suited going into a trade program for 2 years. And they've started to do that more and more in schools, and that's going to be very helpful. In fact, in Germany, they send half their students, half, 50%, Tyus, to trade schools. And you know what? Their unemployment problem is magically not nearly as bad as ours is. And we have this huge underemployment in one sector, and so we've got way more lawyers than we need. They're working as paralegals at $30,000 a year with a law degree. On one extreme, we have way too many white-collar service-level jobs employees, and there's not enough jobs. So then people are clamoring for jobs. But on the other hand, according to the U.S. government and the Bureau of Labor and this sort of thing, they have said that there is something like 2 million open jobs in the plumbing, electrician, pool, changing out your pool filter. I mean, can you believe how much money these people make for cleaning pools in Las Vegas? It's robbery. It's highway robbery. You know,
I couldn't find one. So I had a hot tub, and I literally could not find a place that would come and service a hot tub on a regular basis because they're so busy. They're absolutely slammed. Yeah, all of these companies are doing incredibly well. Anyways, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But it comes down to where this money is coming from. Yeah, and it really is a lie. You're encouraged outside of high school. You go, hey, you go to high school. When you leave high school, here's your two options. Join the military. So basically, join the government's, you know, fight team. Or get in debt to the government and go to college. Those seem to be the two encouraged options. And what a liberating idea to go, you know what, there's a million other options out there. My options are not limited to borrow a bunch of money that I owe back to the government or put my life on the line for the government. There's way more choices out there. And this puts these casinos.
That's a good point, though. I mean, that look at how many people don't go to college here because of the casinos. Why would I go to college and get $100,000 in debt when if I was able to work at a table, I could make $100,000 a year?
Yep.
I mean, they do. Why? Duh. You know, people are I don't know why they don't understand why there's such a huge high school dropout rate here. Why sit in class learning something that's useless? Truly, it's truly useless information for these people. Not everybody needs all of that academia. And I'm saying that as someone who loves to learn. I prided myself on being able to learn any subject, and I loved it. And that's because that's what I wanted to do. But I knew maybe half my high school didn't want to do that, and it's unfortunate that they had to go sit through the same classes I did and get the same education I did, and it was all in thing. I can't imagine if I had to go to school and all I did all day was build things with my hands, because I'm not like – I get bored with that after a while. You know, there's only so much cutting wood I want to do before I'm ready to go, okay, I want to sit in my chair, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so just – it's unfair to these students that we lie to them their whole life. And then we shuttle them into, and it's so shady, right? We shuttle them into government-sponsored loan programs for private and public schools. I mean, you're basically turning these kids into, I hate to say it, but slaves. You're turning college students into slaves for the decade it takes for them to pay back their student loans on average. Yeah.
At minimum, they're indentured, right? At minimum, indentured.
Right. And that's the thing, between the income... So they start their job, right, and they're getting 25% of it taken away right off the top. Then they have to spend the next 10 to 15% of their income on their student loans. And they're down, and most people have to get a car, or they have some kind of transportation system. They have no equity, like you mentioned, Tyus. So they have to go out of nowhere and get a freaking vehicle so they can get to the job. And that's if they're lucky enough to get the job, by the way. Mm-hmm. And like you were mentioning, there are so many unemployed college graduates because they get degrees in things that the free market has already decided there are too many of these, right? Why are historians getting jobs as museum tour guides for $5 or $10 an hour? Well, the reason is because the free market is saying, we've reached our number of historians. This is the number of historians that we need that the public is willing to pay for. And once you've reached that quota, there's no more jobs.
Jobs are getting automated. The jobs become done by robots by the time you get out. It's hard to think of jobs that can't be done in some capacity by a machine in a very short period of time. Like, obviously, truck drivers is on the way out with automated cars, but even doctors and stuff. We've got that supercomputer that Watson... Watson is now diagnosing people faster than doctors can and more accurately. A lot of these jobs are becoming automated, and unfortunately that's going to put these people out of work even before they graduate college. But let's go back to the colleges for a second.
Yeah, for sure.
So a lot of these colleges now, they have this problem where so many people want to go to college because they've got all this money being handed to them by the government. The colleges don't have enough space, so what do? Well, they're going to try and attract the richest, some of the most powerful people they can to their universities. And instead of building the greatest curriculum possible, they seem to be transitioning to creating the greatest experience possible. So, for example, Michigan Technological University, I guess that's what it's called, they have an on-site ski resort built into their campus. Georgia Tech has a water park. Kenyon College provides unlimited free food to their students. Blackburn, Virginia, you get steak and lobster dinners daily. And High Point University, all the dorms have hot tubs. They have a first-rate movie theater in the dorms. You get free snacks. There's an arcade. There's a putting green. There's free ice cream trucks. So they're building these schools out not to provide the greatest education, but to really draw kids in after high school and say, hey, you want to spend that government money at our facility rather than you want to provide the greatest education possible.
For a lot of people, it's a 4-year paid vacation.
Yep, and these schools are incentivized to do that. They're not saying, "Hey, we're going to prepare you best for the future." They know who their clientele are. Their clientele are kids that don't know what to do with their money that they've gotten from the government and don't know what it's going to cost them in the future to be in that level of debt. And so they pander to them by basically creating a cruise ship that the kids get to go to, and they get to leave, yes, with a degree in something, but ultimately they're not focusing on making the education the greater experience. They're focusing on making the marketing incredible. I was reading tons of these where they had, like, water park, all these crazy, crazy facilities that were put in place, and it's just ridiculous. But let's look specifically just at the education that's happening. So... this is a hard one to pronounce. Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. At this particular school, you're banned from criticizing the war on Iraq or the Iraq war, right? You can't criticize it at all. In fact, if you criticize the policy to criticize the war in Iraq, they automatically ban that speech completely. Now, the idea of college is it should be an open a place of open ideas, a place where you should be challenged and you should have to think about what is right and wrong. At Purdue University, they just put out a writing guide where you can't use the word man. So that's just gone. You're not allowed to use that word because they think it gentrification of people. Now, I have no idea whether that works just with mailman and salesman, or if you can't say manicotti anymore. Evergreen State College, a huge situation with a gentleman named Brett Weinstein. Weinstein? Oh, geez, I'm going to get that wrong, and it's going to be associated with the movie guy. Okay, anyways, a college professor there named Brett, he has lost his job there, and his wife has lost his job. They used to have something called a day of absence, where black students chose not to come to school. And they did it out of kind of solidarity over what they've gone through as a group, which is fine. That's what they wanted to do. Well, then they decided to flip that and said, you know what? What we should do is we should say white people shouldn't be allowed to come to school for the day of absence, which the difference between that is really an important difference. One is a voluntary act. The other is something that is forced on somebody based on their skin color. And that's a very, very different situation. So this professor, Brett Weinstein, he basically says, hey, that's super, super racist. I don't back this at all. The students basically marched on him. They kind of locked down the dean of the school. Ultimately, he couldn't come to work anymore. It just wasn't a safe place. And he ended up with a lawsuit that paid him about $500,000. In addition to that, other schools are blocking speakers from being able to speak. So this place of open ideas and open information is being turned into a place where information is massively censored and it's not open. And then they move on to an idea of saying, well, let's create these safe spaces. We want everybody to feel safe in this environment. And like I said earlier, you shouldn't feel safe. Your ideas should be challenged. According to the Department of Education, every year since 2005, the arrests have decreased. Criminal offenses have dropped on average by 2,500 per year at colleges. However, hate crimes seem to increase by over 100 per year. So either all crimes are going down except hate crimes, or everybody is reporting that anything that's happening to them is caused by hate. So we create these safe spaces, and now these safe spaces are being segregated. So if you go to Brown or Berkeley or UC Santa Barbara or Irvine or Cal State or University of Minnesota, you can go to a black-only safe space. These are places where it's not allowed, if you're white, to be able to go to them. It is segregation. You are blocking people from association. It's the worst of mankind. It's as bad as we get as society, and this behavior is being encouraged and promoted and done at these universities. Now, as you said, many of these are private institutions. They're allowed to do whatever they want. But I think that my right to have free speech, I want people to know about what these institutions are doing, what they're promoting, and that I am not behind them.
And don't send your kids there, is what we're saying, really. What we're saying is don't reward these colleges with the ability to segregate kids and it goes unnoticed. Because, and I know a number of my friends that are on the Democrat left side will echo this, this is the beginning. This is how it starts. This is how they come for you, right? First they round you up and they make you feel special and you're in your own little safe space, and then they start to take away your rights. That's how it always works as a minority. I mean, you have to be vigilant for this sort of thing, because these people who think that they're well-meaning are unintentionally bringing us back to pre-1950s segregated education again, and that's the opposite of what we need. People have been made to feel entirely too safe in this country. This idea that we have to be perfectly and 100% safe all the time is ludicrous. You're never, it's a false sense of security and safety. You're not 100% safe all the time. You take risks every day just by getting in your car, walking to school. In fact, unfortunately, and this just breaks my heart, a lady was run over last night at a bus stop here in Las Vegas, waiting for her bus to come. You never know what crazy, unexpected event is going to take place. And that is why it is incredibly important for us not to trade away huge amounts of liberty for what is really background noise in terms of safety and security. There will always be dangers, and we can minimize them as much as possible. But really, the danger here is allowing ourselves to break ourselves up into little teeny tiny groups, because before you know it, we're going to be reading the Dr. Seuss book, Butter Side Up, Butter Side Down, to you guys, because that's what he was warning against, right? He's saying that when we isolate ourselves and we say, well, we just don't discuss politics and religion, those are the things you should be talking about. Those are the things you should be debating. And I've seen a lot of people lately that are like, well, I just won't keep hateful people around. And I'm like, you know, you might be the only person that hateful person knows that isn't a hateful person. There is so much out there. There is so much animosity to anything that's contrary, any belief that's different, that you have to be willing to separate the real trolls, the people who are doing it just for their own personal enjoyment, from the people who disagree and they have a reason to disagree, and you have to listen long enough to figure out why they disagree and have a real discussion, have a real debate. And so, again, personal insults aside, I think that it's up to every single person to find someone that they disagree with about an issue and simply talk to them about it, especially if you're libertarian. Right? Wouldn't you say, Tyus? I mean, it's so important to get out there and talk to people about how we disagree and why, and that we care about them. There are so many misconceptions about us out there, and one of the main reasons is that we're reticent to wander into the firing zone. We have to be willing to set aside our psychological sense of safety and go to these hateful, angry Facebook posts and go, you know, you can have it both ways. It's called the Libertarian Party, where neither side has to be right. You can choose not to shop there, and they can choose to be bigots. And when they go out of business, obviously that wasn't a selling point. You know, I mean, this is how you handle it. You let the free market that always is there, and it'll never be eroded. And the free market, the reason that we talk about it, we talk about a lot of economics on this podcast, and I know Tyus and I have mentioned this before, the reason is because the free market will always exist. There are just different weights and counterbalances and punishments that might be assigned arbitrarily by the government to various activities. And some of it is very much warranted, but a lot of it is completely unnecessary, really gets in the way of you getting to do what you want with your life that has no impact on other people. That means smoking plants. That means holding a rally. That means talking to black students and getting to find out what are their senses of struggle in the society today. How can we further, you know, move together on Dr. King's dream? We'll never get there by providing areas where they only hear from their own viewpoint and they never understand why there's this disconnect. And if we keep doing this, Tyus, I'm worried. I don't know about you, but I'm worried.
Yeah, we're on a slippery slope. The reason this episode really got pushed forward is due to a show by Steven Crowder called Change My Mind, which you can find online. You can find it on YouTube. It's basically him going to public areas and many times universities and putting up a sign that says, you know, I am pro-life, or I am for people having the right to have guns, or anything like that. And he goes up and he says, you know what, change my mind. He doesn't edit the footage. He has a real open conversation with people. And if you're not comfortable having that conversation, maybe watch other people have that conversation and find out that it can be safe as long as you treat people with respect. It's not about like fighting, like you see on on the internet oftentimes, where you see people debating and it becomes this monolithic argument. You can treat somebody with respect and be open to having your mind changed is going to be the fastest way for them to be open to having their mind changed. Dive into the things that you're uncomfortable with. On that particular series, he was talking about the pro-life versus pro-choice, and I was reluctant to click on it because I was like, man, this is going to be an awkward and uncomfortable thing. And then I went, you know what? Am I really hiding from discomfort? And I'm doing it behind my computer screen, much less in person. Somebody's going to ask me how I feel about this. And I have to be able to say it honestly and proudly. Here's what I believe. Here's what I'm for. And even if somebody says, you know what, I'm against that, that's fine. They don't have to agree with me. But maybe we can find common ground. At least we can find respect for each other while we say it. And if all they find from that is respect for me during that conversation, go, you know what, this guy's not crazy. Well, maybe the next person that has the same viewpoint as I do, they go, well, this guy might at least have a respectful stance, right? It might tone them down just a little bit. Go out there, express your viewpoint, and get involved. Obviously, we say get involved every time. If you haven't gotten involved yet, man, you've been listening to these episodes and missing the message at the end, which is go to lpnevada.org and see how you can get involved. Tomorrow, there's a big... Actually, do you want to cover this, Alex? Tell me what's happening tomorrow.
Well, tomorrow is the 2018 State Convention for the Libertarian Party of Nevada. You will have the opportunity to select candidates for partisan public office. It's at the Alexis Park Resort's Zeus Ballroom, 375 East Harmon Avenue in Las Vegas. And check-in is 11 a.m. It's a process called credentialing. Sounds really fancy and formal, but it's really just checking in. And 12:30 is the call to order, which also sounds very important, but it's the beginning. It's when we're going to actually start the convention. And we have about a two-hour program. We're very excited to present. This is your opportunity as the membership to not only do the job of the convention body, which is to put up our candidates for state and federal office and any county offices we want to add as well, but it's important because you get to hear from us about what we've been doing with your volunteer hours and your money and your voter registration and how we've been using this to grow liberty in Nevada. So if you're interested in that and you want to hear more, come tomorrow, please. Check in at 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. We'll be beginning pretty much right on 12:30 p.m. unless there's some kind of large crowd that shows up at the last minute or something and we might delay. But right around 12:30, we're going to get started. And then, even if you don't want to come to the convention, I highly encourage you to at least come to the town hall, which we're going to have starting at 3 o'clock. And this town hall is going to be with a Democrat and a Libertarian, and we're working on getting a Republican there also. We have a couple people that said that they will probably be able to come and represent those viewpoints. And it's because, just like we've been talking about on today's podcast, we believe firmly in having opposing viewpoints presented. And we want our Libertarian leader, our convention goers, to have the opportunity to ask questions. How do the different parties see this? And we have to start this conversation because we have to learn a little bit about how the GOP and the Dems see things before we can start to convince them to see it our way. And we'll have Wendy up there, our amazing legislative director, going to bat for the LP, and she will be coming up with a great way to represent our party on various issues that we will be getting into tomorrow. So please come tomorrow. It's in the same place. The town hall starts at 3. The convention starts at 12:30. Come on out. It's going to be great. We're going to have a lot of fun. There'll be water and coffee provided. So even if there's parts you think are boring, we've got plenty of coffee. So drink it dry, and we'll be looking forward to seeing you there.
I'm going to let's wrap it up on that. Until next time, let's make it all about freedom.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.